Parliament, let me first really apologize for starting late. It's unlike Tuesday today. We usually go to a meeting that starts at 8:30 and come back at 9:30, but this May month is very busy, more than the other years that we have been here in Parliament. We apologize for starting late. I can see the presentation is long, but I think we will endure and be patient and start and listen to whatever is going to take place. I don't have the agenda. Honorable Minister and the members, I think everybody has got the agenda in front of him or her. We will give over to the department. The department will do the briefing on regulations, the prevention of and treatment of substance abuse, Act number 70 of 2008. Over to you, Minister and your team, Deputy Minister and your team.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
It's a wonderful day today, very wet. It's a nice Cape Town weather. And thank you very much for inviting us. I also want to greet you today in this very important week, the week of the children's protection. We were launching the children's protection week today, on Saturday, together with the president. It was on Sunday, together with the president in Kgalishiwe, Kimberley. It also deals with substance abuse. But the purpose of this presentation will be to brief the Select Committee on Social Services, the Select Committee on the Development of Regulations in terms of the Prevention of a Treatment for Substance Abuse Act. We have requested comments from the Select Committee on the proposed regulations, and we request the Select Committee to support the Minister of Social Development on the development of these regulations. Now, the legislation, as you all know, was passed in 2008, June. President accepted it in 2009, and the legislation was costed, plus or minus 350 million, was allocated by Treasury to begin the process of implementation. And it was allocated to all the 9 provinces, as you know that we have got 9 provinces, to even establish treatment centers, which were established, I think, in how many? In 5 provinces, which is Northern Cape, Western Cape, Northwest, KZN, Gauteng, and Mpumalanga. We still have provinces that haven't got centers, which will be Northern Cape, Limpopo, Free State, and Eastern Cape. Now, we hope that in the near future, we'll be having those centers established in all those provinces so that we can continue with our work. The initiation cost I'll give to Connie to just indicate the initiation cost before I round up and give to the officials to present.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members and Deputy Minister. I think really the purpose today is to come and present the content of the regulations themselves. However, we thought it's important just to give a background on where we are, what we have done till today, because there's a gap of 2 years since the legislation itself was assented by the President. Basically, the 2 years was on the extensive consultation in terms of this legislation because there's interest. So we had to consult extensively, and the Act also requires the Minister to consult with certain specific ministers in terms of this legislation. Now, when this legislation was costed then, we came up with three scenarios, and also in terms of the initiation process, the transitional measures that we want to put in place, and the full implementation. You'll see in the presentation that we're envisaging that this regulations or the Act itself will be implemented come 1 October this year. According to us, it will be a full implementation because as we speak, we are implementing certain areas or certain parts of the legislation, but not in full because the regulations were still not finalized. So hence today we would welcome inputs in terms of the regulations to finalize them for the Minister to approve them before the implementation in October. So it's part of the consultation process also. As the Deputy Minister has indicated, we have challenges in terms of other provinces that have no treatment centers. Remember, the legislation is not only about treatment centers, it's broad services. However, the thorny issue is around treatment centers because they are infrastructural in nature. So if funds are allocated in provinces, the challenge we have is that since it's an equitable share, provinces divert it to any other priorities in provinces. I can give an example of Northern Cape. Already in 2007, and funds were allocated for them to build a treatment center, but those funds were diverted to other priorities in the province. So without wasting time, I'll hand over to the DM because we'd want you to listen to the content of the regulations themselves in terms of what we're proposing, in terms of setting norms and implementing the legislation.
Thank you, Connie. Thank you very much, Connie. Just to indicate that even the provinces that have the centers, it's really a drop in the ocean. If you look at the Western Cape, they've got three centers. And if you look at in Northwest, they've got one center. If you look at the KZN, as big as it is, they've got two centers. If you look at Gauteng, it has got one center. And if you look at Mpumalanga, it has got one center. Now, also the centers for children, in Gauteng, we've got one which is private and one public. In Mpumalanga, we've got one private. In KZN, we've got one private. In Western Cape, we've got one public and two private. In the Free State, we've got one private. So there's still a huge gap that we're supposed to close as the department together with civil society. So without a waste of time, I'd like to give over to the to the officials to give you their full presentation on the regulations. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Before the officials, the Deputy Minister, we started late the meeting. We didn't have time to introduce ourselves. I hope the members will bear with me. That we will catch the names as they present, and every person who presents the anything, she or he will just say his name and we will carry on. We started very late. Thanks. Over to the department.
Honorable Deputy Minister, the Chairperson, and honorable members of the House, as it has been indicated already by the Deputy Minister and Ms. Nomalo, these regulations that are being presented to you today are in terms of the prevention of and treatment for substance.
Could you please?
Oh, apologies for that. My name is Luyanda Mchochisa from the Head Office Social Development. Okay. These regulations are in terms of the said Act, and we are making the presentation today to the Select Committee And the purpose of the presentation is to brief the Select Committee on Social Services on the development of this region. For that. So the purpose is to brief the Select Committee on the development of these regulations and to request comments on the proposed regulations, and also request the Select Committee on Social Services to support the Minister of Social Development. The progress thus far in terms of the development of these regulations is that these regulations have been consulted with various stakeholders, which include the Central Drug Authority, provincial departments of social development, the national departments that the Act requires them to be consulted, which include basic and higher education, health, correctional services, COGTA, women, children and people with disabilities, arts and culture, sports and recreation, Medicines Control Council, and the National Youth Commission. The provincial departments of all these other departments that have been mentioned have also been consulted, and also the civil society organizations. We did receive comments during the consultation, which we scrutinized and incorporated where necessary. We must acknowledge that sometimes we may need to have everything in the regulations, but unfortunately we are guided by the Act itself. What it says must be regulated, and we can't have everything people want to have in the regulations. So these regulations have been published for public comments on 9 March 2012 in the Extraordinary Gazette, and media has also been approached to broadcast and solicit comments from the members of the general public. Why the regulations? These regulations, as it has already been indicated, that the Act is not yet in force. They are needed in order to facilitate the full implementation of the Substance Abuse Act. We must also acknowledge that the nature of the, say, the jurisprudence of these regulations take three forms, in the sense that they address a problem that is currently in the provinces today, because some of the provinces have got their own way of dealing with registrations of treatment centers, halfway houses, and community-based services. So there is no uniform approach in doing that. So that is why these regulations have also been developed. So the Act itself was passed by Parliament on 24 June 2008, as the Deputy Minister has indicated, and the Act was also assented to by the President a year later on 21 April 2009. Now, in terms of Section 65 of the Act, that is the Prevention of and Treatment for Substance Abuse Act, Section 65 requires the Minister of Social Development, in consultation with other ministers and after consultation with other ministers and organs of state, to develop the regulations. So the Act itself will only be implemented once the regulations have been finalized, because the bulk of the provisions in the current Act, or the incoming Act, if I can say, need regulations in order to be activated. Preparations are underway for the proclamation of the Act, and 1 October has been identified as the ideal date for the coming into force of the act, after it has been proclaimed by the President. That is just the background to the act itself, and now if we get to the content itself, we will note that Chapter 2 of the regulations deals with the minimum norms and standards. In terms of Section 6 of the Act, there is a need to have minimum norms and standards in these regulations. And the minimum norms and standards that these regulations deal with are the programs that give effect to prevention services, and the programs that give effect to early intervention services, and also the protection of children and service users in treatment centers and halfway houses. As I've already indicated, this is just a presentation, not an exhaustive catalogue of what these regulations deal with. Otherwise, the copy is available and it's about 212 pages if we may have to go through it. But it's just an indication of what has been covered there. So in terms of the programs that give effect to prevention services, Regulation 3 deals with prevention programs, and the indication is that these programs must always be accessible and they are available to all individuals and their family members, and must be able to link individuals and families with resources, and must have the ability to create developmental opportunities and discourage the experimental use of substances, and must be able to educate and raise awareness about substance abuse, and must aim at building capacity of individuals that are likely to be affected by substance abuse. They must also ensure that there is a promotion of healthy lifestyles and promotion of abstinence altogether, as opposed to reasonable use. I understand there is some challenge there when we say pusa wise, or we say don't pusa altogether. The abstinence versus responsible use. We also have the programs that give effect to early intervention services, which we say in terms of these regulations must be able to prevent harm from progressing, those who are already affected. And the screening of the individuals must be encouraged, and must be able to motivate individuals or families to be involved in intensive treatment, and also facilitate the admission to intervention programs. There is also a regulation dealing with the protection and of children and service users in treatment centers. We may ask why children and service users being differentiated, but that is the nature of the act at present, because they may all be service users, but the act decided to say children and service users as separate organs. So in terms of that regulation, the treatment centers and halfway houses must protect children and service users against all forms of ill treatment by any person in the treatment centers, because experience must have shown that children are being abused in these treatment centers, or they fight against each other during their stay in these treatment centers. There must also be protection against discomfort and favorable weather conditions. This regulation deals more with the issue of the lack of uniformity, as I indicated. Where you get into other treatment centers, that maybe they supply three or two blankets for a service user during their stay there. Or sometimes you get to other treatment centers, service users don't have blankets altogether. So that regulation addresses such conditions. And the sharing of personal resources, the issue of unhygienic premises, as inspectors have gone from treatment center to treatment center and identified some challenges in respect of those areas. And also the abuse of corrective measures that is also taken care of, because it has been indicated that sometimes you find that service users are being used as hard laborers during their stay in the treatment centers, or are punished in such a way that they get affected emotionally and physically. There is also the issue of risk of fire, where we deal with the issues of fire management plans that must be dealt with in connection with the municipalities, and also have a situation where the risk is managed properly, having learned lessons from other institutions where, I think it was a boarding school, where children were locked inside and fire broke and the keys were nowhere to be found and all that. So these regulations do address that kind of situation. Also, the issue of malnutrition and starvation, it has been understood that sometimes the service users, although they pay in these treatment centers, when they punish them or apply some corrective measures, they make them starve and say they are going to skip meals and all that, so that is being discouraged in terms of these regulations. The issue of illnesses and diseases, how do you deal with the issue of contagious diseases and all that, and how do we deal with issues of service users who need extra medication, who may need to be taken to nearest hospitals and all that. So there must be those kinds of arrangements to take care of. There is also a need to protect them against, that is service users and children, against robbery and assault by members of the public. So the security measures must be such that nobody can just walk in and assault people in the treatment centers and halfway houses. The issue of hazardous objects and hazardous buildings, that is the building plans must be approved by the local authority so that when service users are in the treatment centers or halfway houses, they've got the comfort of being there and not be exposed to dangers and all that due to old buildings, as it has been identified some other time. The hazardous activities, the nature of the sickness that service users may have at the time must also be taken into consideration. That if maybe they need to be taken for sports activities and all that, one's health has to be taken into consideration, that this kind of a sporting activity is not ideal for this particular service user because of the condition of health and all that. So that regulation refers to that kind of a scenario. There is an issue around the missing of academic activities. Remember, these regulations have to be developed in conjunction with other ministers, basic education in particular, in this regard. It may not necessarily be the role of the Minister of Development to ensure the issue of academic activities, but because the regulations have to be developed in consultation with the Minister of Basic Education, as to how do we deal with the situation where children are in the treatment centers and halfway houses, and at the same time they are expected to be at school. How do we deal with the issue of their homeworks being transmitted from the treatment center to school? What kind of arrangement that can be done? So this regulation addresses that. And it also looks at any form of violation of the rights of children and harm by any other person, and also looking at the issue of the risk of relapse. Chapter 3 of these regulations deal with the contracts that have to be entered into between the minister and the providers of substance abuse services. The Act says the minister may prescribe the manner in which these contracts may be entered into. So this regulation addresses that, where it deals with the issue of the applications and the kind of characteristics the organization that deals with the issue of substance abuse must have. So the conditions for receiving financial assistance by service users is also one of the regulations that is needed in terms of the Act, where we have said that the minister or the person who renders the services that are related to substance abuse must have applied for financial assistance and all that. These are just basic requirements. I must submit that indeed this particular regulation, it's a little bit problematic because it should just be a contract between the minister and the service provider and not necessarily be made an issue of legislation, because the law already provides how contracts are entered into. But because the Act says this must be done. And also the issue of remedies for non-compliance, if a service provider has been given money by the minister in order to render services related to substance abuse, it's a little bit of a challenge, although we have regulated on it, because the remedies exist in terms of common law and the rules of court decisions and all that. So, but it's there in the regulations. There is also a need for norms and standards for community-based services. The community-based services, the norms and standards for community-based services are more or less the same, because with the treatment centers and halfway houses, because we identified that there is a need for early intervention services, the prevention services for community-based services. So the norms and standards that apply to treatment centers and halfway houses equally apply to community-based services. The only difference is that we have taken note of the fact that community-based services are more non-residential in nature. So in as far as that issue is concerned, we have not regulated norms and standards for that. So this also, that is Chapter 5, deals with the conditions and requirements for registration. The conditions and requirements for registration, as we have indicated in the beginning, that there is no uniformity around. So now the task to register community-based services has been given to the HOD in terms of these regulations. That is, the HOD has got the power to approve applications or decline them and all that. But before that, we also have to take into consideration that people with the history of dealing in drugs may not register treatments, community-based services and all that, running away from the risk of relapse and all that. The guidelines for the functioning of community-based services. But before the guidelines, it is also worth mentioning that although this particular regulation deals with the powers and duties the HOD has in terms of approving applications for registration of community-based services, this is not the only function the provinces have, because the functions exist in two ways. It's either the legislation dictates that the HOD or the MECs must do this. At the same time, the current arrangement is that there is delegation of powers. Some of the regulations here may not talk directly to what the HODs or the MECs must do, but because of the delegation of powers, the DG can delegate to the HOD via the MEC, and the minister may delegate to the MEC via the premier and all that. So in a nutshell, all these regulations, they have a direct bearing on the responsibilities of the HODs and the MECs. Because even the current situation is that the treatment centers and halfway houses are registered in the provinces, although normally the power is with the DG, but it has been delegated. So in a way, all these regulations do affect provinces. The guidelines for the functioning of community-based services, how should they be? That is, they need to elect a chairperson, because in terms of the Act, there is a need to create a management structure for community-based services. This is the same issue with treatment centers and halfway houses. That is the issue of management structures. It departs from a point where there is a board of directors. Not that there must be no board of directors where the law demands that, but there must also be the management structure, so that when inspectors from the Department of Social Development want to visit these treatment centers, there must always be somebody to be accountable for whatever is needed at the time. Because the practice has been that each time inspectors from Social Development visit treatment centers, it has been like the director is in England, so-and-so is overseas and all that, and there's a problem on the ground that wants to be addressed. So the challenge is that that kind of a scenario now needs to be closed through these regulations by ensuring that treatment centers, community-based centers, halfway houses have management structures which will always be there and populated by people who will be responsible at all times when questions need to be answered. And these structures must be able to determine and develop policies for the centers, and must be able to promote the norms and standards that we have dealt with, and also provide oversight and direction for the treatment centers. And there is a need for them to meet at least quarterly, so that the department is in a position to get quarterly reports from time to time. Those are needed. The requirements and conditions for registration of treatment centers. So this, as I say, in fact I said earlier, that there is a link between the registration of these, because there is a need to comply with the norms and standards, and the DG has got the power to register the treatment centers and halfway houses. But that power can be delegated to the provinces. So the requirements are more or less the same with those of the community-based services. Appeals against certain decisions of the Director General. Sometimes there is a need to appeal by the applicants to say, I applied to register a community-based center, a treatment center, halfway house, and my application was declined. So this provides for that kind of eventuality. The issue of integrated aftercare and reintegration services, where we have provided that there must be provision of life skills to help service users to maintain sobriety and not be risked for relapse and all that. There must be professional support. So the treatment centers, halfway houses, and community-based services must be able to have personnel who are going to be able to address the issue of integrated aftercare and reintegration services. Chapter 15, you will see that some of the chapters have been skipped. It's just because they deal with normal legislative issues. So there is no need to worry about them. They have to exist in terms of the law and be there. Chapter 15 refers to the transfer and retransfer of service users from prison, health establishments, youth care centers, and alternative care centers. This is one of the areas where we feel there's a little bit of a challenge in terms of the legislation, because it's the access, there must be regulations regarding this transfer and retransfer. Because sometimes it poses a security risk when it comes to the transfer of prisoners from treatment centers, from prisons to treatment centers, instead of the service being rendered in the prison itself. So if it was a transfer, maybe, of prisoners who are on their way home as a step-out kind of a facility to say they are being prepared for reintegration into society, it would have been much better. But now there is this issue of retransfer, which may suggest that a prisoner may be taken out of prison to a treatment center and then retransferred to prison. I don't think maybe the legislator might have intended that kind of a situation, but the Act does say we need to regulate on that, and these regulations address exactly that. So this is the regulations refer to the manner of how that transfer has to take place between the hospitals, the place of safety for children, and all that, moving them from those institutions to halfway houses or treatment centers, depending on the nature of the ailment that needs to be addressed. So as we have indicated that these regulations, I mean this presentation is not an exhaustive catalog of what these regulations provide, but in a nutshell they look address these issues that we have identified, and then the other issues are just normal issues that have to exist by operation of law. So the request that we have here today is that the Select Committee takes note of the development of these regulations, and we also request that if possible give comments, which we would appreciate, that is on the regulations, and also support the Minister on the development of these regulations. I thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Ms. Chochi. Deputy Minister, do you have anything that you want to add on what she has said, or anybody from the department? As the Deputy Minister says, she said she's giving over to the officials. That's what I heard.
Thank you very much. I don't think I have anything more to add. Suffice to say, maybe I can give colleagues something.
No, Honourable Chair, I'll wait for questions.
Okay. It's time for questions, members. I'll give over to you, Honourable Ncube, Honourable Faba, Honourable Plaki, on that order.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. My first one, you have to pardon me because we only got this.
Sorry, Honourable Ncube. Before you go forward, you first introduce, because we did not have that chance to introduce ourselves.
I'm Member Ncube from Gauteng, representing Gauteng's interest. I just want to find out, pardon me if the regulations or in those 200 and whatever pages is there, which for imagine, I'm running short of the right word, for imagine centers, how many years would you determine in terms of you should be in existence and a proof of a record of we have done something. Can I just image and then apply? I've not looked at the minimum standards, HO2 standards. Do you have a minimum standard to allow the growth? Because you are telling us that in Gauteng is only one. In other provinces is private. So if they're private, then there will be a problem of access. So in those provinces, even in Gauteng, small as it is, but people are not small, 10.5 million. And then when you look at 10.5, maybe children are more than that. And also, do you have a mechanism of cushioning or mentoring those that will be emerging, so that they would, after 2 years or so, be able to be accredited as centers or whatever it is. The next one is to say you are coming up with a target of at least by October this year you should have passed these regulations. According to the costing that you've done, do you think all provinces will be able to implement? For instance, let me take the I think it was 3 or 4 provinces that are private. Do you think we'll be able to full blown implement? You have indicated that you want to implement full blown. So I'm asking the capacity. Are you going to be having enough capacity to ensure that even at Motu, at Msinga, they are able to access this? And Msinga, for instance, we were there last year, and just 2 days after we were there, there was a girl that was getting raped by 9 people known by the community, and they ran to the mountains. The police could not be able to find them. So I'm saying your capacity, would it be possible that even the forest of the poor get access to it? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Willem Faber and I represent the Northern Cape. As we are sitting here as representatives of our provinces, I was utterly disturbed by the introduction of what happened in the Northern Cape, by hearing that funds were budgeted for creating a centre, but that it was diverted for something else. Now, I don't know, I must be quite honest, I didn't go through the act, but I want to know, how is it possible that funds can be diverted where this is actually centres that needs to be there? I don't think someone must be held accountable, I suppose. I mean, you can't just take money that was budgeted for to create this type of centre and then just redistribute it to something else. I want to know how this happened and what action are you taking on that. Then the second thing, implementing systems and regulations is good. We all know it's good to regulate all these things. But someone must see to it that these regulations are being followed. And that's obviously what I'm getting to is people's going to have to be appointed to look that these regulations are followed. Now, I want to know how many people will be appointed. Have you made the sum on, according to the centres, how many people have to be employed? And what training will they be given so that the assessments can be done accordingly? Thank you very much. That's all.
Thank you, Chair. Sipho Plaatje. I'm representing the Northwest Province, the committee. Chair, I must have slipped some of the things that the President has said, but I would ask question anyway to make sure that I understood exactly what you said. But what I want to check first, Chair, through you, is that I also support the regulations. It's important that if you put up assistance, it must be regulations to make sure that the smooth running of that system you're putting in place. So who decide where the center or the halfway house should be located? Considering what you said in terms of the blanket application of interested or willing organization and communities. That will be my first question. The second question would slightly to what Honorable Father have said, I would want to look at the processes to ensure that people you appoint or people elected in the local drug action committees, what processes do you involved in to make sure that you've got relevant and good people in serving in those structures? Because you might open it up for open meeting, people raise hands and elect, and only to find that the committee does not have a clue what is expected of them to run the center. So that will be my second question, to check on the processes. Maybe to go as far as looking into the skills those people have in making sure that they bring in an assistant. And the other question, Chen, is to look into the through you, the DGD, the infrastructure outlook of centers. I've just gone through step by step with you in your norms and standards, but I did not hear you saying in terms of the infrastructure. This is what we would want to see. If the organization says they want to open a center, then you will say the specification and the structures that you want to see is this one. The infrastructure outlook of the halfway houses and the treatment centers. And whether in those centers, what kind of staff do you, professional staff, do you attract and put into the center? To make no, I'm asking this question, Chair, that sometimes you would have, let me say, patients who are going for the treatment in the center would need maybe a serious professional help. Do you make sure that you attract as far as the professional people in terms of the staffing of the centers and halfway houses? That would be my question, Chair. Thank you very much.
Before you, Honorable Broto, if Ufaba hasn't finished.
Yes, thank you. Just following up on my first question, or on the question on the appointments of staff then at these centres, I'd like to know if the department is somehow going to look at, the two registers of children, child abuse register, as well as sexual offences register. I need to know if that's going to be checked up, because we can't let offenders that were found guilty on sexual charges against children or abuse against children get into the system of working with children again. So it is of very much important that the scanning of these applicants of such a nature that we don't have those people connected to children, so that children can perhaps be abused again or get in a situation where this can happen again to them. So I'd like to know if you will also look through that.
Mr. Mchotese, could you please switch off your mic?
Oh.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, my concern is mostly on those learners.
Could you please introduce yourself?
Oh, sorry. My name is Omar Buroto. I'm representing the province of the Rising Sun.
Yes.
That's Mpumalanga. The beautiful one. Mche. Oh. That's it. My concern is mostly with learners and that are in the centers. It was said that in chapter 2 they are dealing with that, and I must say, because I only got these regulations today, I tried to go through chapter 2 here, but I don't get a... It's on. Yes. I'm moving it because I had an echo. Okay. So I can't find the regulation that really states what's going to happen to those learners. Maybe we need to really get deeper into that, because most of the young people that are going there are still learners. So we must be careful not to break that that contact that they had with learning. In so saying, you're saying maybe there's a need for trained counselors for these learners, or trained tutors or whatever for the learners themselves. But you will tell me what is the plan on those learners. And then I think there is a need, as we go on, for community services also to be educated on this, but as you are saying here. But I just want to know, where will these resources come from, and who will make sure that follow-ups are done for this community people? We are aware that even though you have told us that there are those public institutions and those private ones that do the job, in our country we have this some outpatient services that are illegal. In a way, they call themselves private, but they are not registered. And they use their own methods of assisting and rehabilitating, which sometimes become dangerous to the beneficiaries themselves. And then, do you maybe know about the existence of such? And do you have that, what do you call it, a stance or what? To know where we have this type of practices that are not maybe registered with you, but they are doing the same work. Because from what we read and heard, this becomes dangerous most of the time to the beneficiaries. Instead of assisting, they become even worse. The last question, the last thing, Chair, I want to talk about is the... I'm sorry I came late, but there was talk of public and private centers in different provinces. Some provinces don't have. Is it possible maybe for us to access that information on paper, so that we are able to check, to keep in check as to what is happening in other provinces? This is a serious problem, and we are really thankful for the regulations. Thank you, Chair.
Thank honourable members. I've got few questions that I also wanted to raise and concerns. The first question also is about the centres that are already there, that have been established by private people with maybe with less experience. Just to add on what the two honourable members have said on the back, they've got the background now or the experience of working into those centers. Because they are working for private companies or for private people, will the regulation accommodate them to be trained as they are working for those private companies? In your slide, this hasn't got pages, but it's progress in the development of regulations. There is a line that says media has also been approached to broadcast the and solicit comments from the members of the general public. I'm worried. Usually, the national or the departments, when they are talking about media, they usually talk about those. The national media only. Have you considered the local radio stations? Because for example, in my area, we've got Itakalani. If you get to that area, the rest of the people there, they are listening to their local radio station because they are interested in the things that are happening locally in their area. They know that they don't listen to other radio stations, but they are more interested in what is happening in their local area. And also, could you clarify to us on chapter 2 on the minimum norms and standards, when you say
the programs that give effect to prevention services, Regulation 3, aim at the creation of developmental opportunities. Could you clarify more on that? I'm not sure, maybe I did not listen because I had somebody who disturbed me. And also, on Chapter 2, you said you encourage the people that are working with children not to starve the children when they punish a child that has done something wrong in the center, not to starve. You say you encourage them not to punish them by starving. Can't you force them? Can't the regulation force them not to? Because if you encourage them, I remember I was a teacher, we were encouraged not to use ilendo, corporal punishment. We were really much encouraged, every day we were encouraged. But if you can go to a school now, they will say it's not a hitting something, it's a pointer, you see. But it sometimes turned over on the very same day to be used to punish a child with. they call it a pointer now. On Chapter 4, the conditions and requirements for registration, it's a person must not be a person with a history of dealing in drugs. Does this apply to a person who wants to open the center, or does this apply to only to people who are dealing with drugs? And no, not on with for those who are those who were caught using drugs, ne, and come, they were rehabilitated and coming back to, and maybe they want to educate or they want to be part of the centers who are combating this type of crime. Are they not allowed to be part of the centers also? The Chapter 7. Guidelines for functioning of community-based services, that they must determine management structure of community-based services, must determine and develop policies. Are they going to develop their own policies? Because I want this to be clear even to the public. Is it going to determine their own policies, or their policies must be based on a national policy presented to them? Because I've got a problem with people who are running these private centers who have got their own policies, and they would say, maybe we've been running this center for 15 years before you even become we're in the democracy, and the policies that we have are much better than the policies that you have. Are they supposed to run the to have policies based on national norms? Thank you, Chairperson. Oh, on the Chairperson. All right, I'm always a whip, you know, of the committee. I'm not usually the Chairperson. There are provinces that are being that have these centers. They have five of them, four of them. I want to know if the four you said Deputy Minister, you are looking, as a ministry, you are looking forward to open up centers in those provinces. I just wanted to know, were they not budgeted for in that time, or you just did not have ilendo, a good coordination maybe with the provincial department and with the national department? Thank you. Over to the department.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members. I'll start, and then my colleagues will fill in where maybe I have missed some questions. In terms of emerging centers, the question was, how many years should an organization or any other person who wants to establish a facility can have in terms of experience to be considered for registration? All what we're saying in the legislation is that we are encouraging now community-based interventions, because the current legislation really is silent or quiet about either prevention or community interventions. And I think all of us, we know that treatment is very expensive. So as we promote community interventions, that's where we think services will be accessible. So in terms of experience, you need to prove that you're going to use people who have got the knowledge in terms of either it's the retired professionals that you're going to use. And in terms of accreditation, we'll check their credibility in terms, if you are a retired social worker, were you a registered social worker? Are you currently registered? If not, what is your standing? Same with the nurses, because in a community-based intervention, you would need those professionals so that they can even assist with referrals. In terms of you have to register also the NPO as a non-profit organization at a community base. So we will assist you. If maybe you are not as yet registered, we will take you through. We'll assist you and ensure that you are registered. And what if you're struggling with establishing your committee, we'll assist you as a department. If you're struggling with drafting a constitution, we'll give you, because there's also a template that is available so that we can assist those up-and-coming organizations. Fortunately, even the department prioritize funding also for community-based, because we believe that they need to be nurtured so that they are at the level where we want them to be. We also have a coaching and mentoring program for the upcoming or emerging CSOs. So we'll also subject those organizations to that process so that they find themselves functioning properly and that they do not subject the service users to abuse of human rights and others. So necessarily there's no years of experience that you can say you must be operating for 5 years. No. As you come forward and say, I'm ready, I'm interested, I want to do this, then we indicate you what are the minimum requirements, what are the areas of requirements that we need you to comply with for you to be registered either as an NPO, also in terms of this act as a community-based organization, and also for funding, what are the things that you need to comply with for you to access funding. And then in terms of the targets for the year in terms of capacity to implement, as I indicated, I think in my introduction, this act was promulgated in 2008 and assented in 2009. By that time already, we costed the legislation. We might say it's long, but the point I'm trying to drive is that Treasury already allocated funds around 2007, 350 million across provinces. Now, the purpose was for provinces to start preparing for the implementation, because you can't say 1 October, boom, we implement it. There are certain things that you need to put systems in place and processes. And also, if it's infrastructure, you need to start, because infrastructure can take 3 to 4 years to put it and make sure that you resource it properly. So, but we are disappointed by the fact that there are some provinces that have not yet built in treatment centers, like the issue of Northern Cape. Yes, it's true that they were allocated funds. I think I also want to, in the meantime, as I'm responding to the first questions, also deal with the question of the Honorable Member from Northern Cape. That, as we know, that provinces and nations have got concurrent functions. The issue of provincial treasurers, if they're given equitable share, they've got a right to distribute their funds according to priorities of that particular province. Yes, when we put a bid at a national level, it was specific to say it is for this legislation and it's for building a treatment center, at least for, and in that year it was specific for Northern Cape and Northwest. But unfortunately, those funds were diverted to other provincial priorities. And national, we raised this as an issue, but I think the provincial priorities override what we said we want to. Yes, so we are tight. We rely on provinces to push for that. So as a result, it is sometimes discouraging to continue bidding for funds, because you know that when they land in the provincial treasuries, they can go anywhere. They can go to housing, they can go to other areas. Meanwhile, it was requested from National Treasury in the name of substance abuse.
Maybe to add on that one, you should also indicate to the member that in follow-up of his question, there were no people employed towards that particular program of substance abuse. So he cannot say how many people were employed, because the money was diverted for something else.
Oh, thanks, DM, for that addition. In fact, in all provinces, when we did the costing, we also included the issues of resources in terms of personnel. Mm-hmm. To say we propose that in each district there should be this type of personnel, the structure, we propose structures. Mm-hmm. So hence, even the allocation was based on that and in the type of services. So in provinces where they've moved, because I must say other provinces have moved, they even created direct rates in their provinces in terms of only dealing with substance abuse. But in other areas, substance abuse, you look for it in their structure. You can't find it anywhere. It's either within some other areas or functions, and then you see, they say, this is the deputy director dealing with substance abuse in this province. So those are the challenges we're grappling with. But the national department didn't just sit and fold arms. What we did, we also proposed currently a new structure to say, can't you still consider putting substance abuse as a separate unit in your province so that you have a dedicated personnel to deal with issues of substance abuse. The same with other areas, because you will know that substance abuse spill over to issues of violence, victim empowerment and other areas. We also said to them, can't you determine this as focus areas that you need to allocate dedicated personnel to? But we won't rest and say no, provinces have to be there. We keep on urging and requesting. Minister does that also through MINMAX, where she meets with MSCs. Our DG also does that through meeting with HODs. We also do that when we meet with our counterparts. So I think that also answers the question, how many people will be employed to implement? I mean, the numbers we do have, but I think the issue is, can we really force the province? Because currently they tell us, provincial treasurers are telling them, you can't exceed this amount for you to employ personnel, even if you have money, but we want to take this money for other things. So we rely on this Honorable House to really push and assist us to implement this mandate. And then the next question was about who considers where the centers and halfway houses should be. It's purely a provincial competence. All what we're saying, we said, these are the resources. You know your hotspots, you know your province, you know your geographical spread, where the services that are not provided. So it's up to the province to decide, this is where we want. All we do as national, we provide technical support and any other support that the province might need. The processes of electing the local drug action committees and even management committees. I think the regulations are clear in terms of the management committees and the local drug action committees. The municipalities, there are proposals in terms of who should constitute a local drug action committee at a municipal level. So each and every municipality should have a local drug action committee, and we stipulate how who should be providing leadership in that area. I think it's the municipality for the local drug action committee. In terms of the management structure, what the regulation says, I think around Regulation 57, we propose what type of people you should be looking for in terms of skills and competences, because we believe not any other person can serve in certain structures. People have got different gifts. But if you want this structure to really function optimally, we propose certain skills and qualifications that you need to consider as you appoint management structure for a halfway house, for a treatment center, and for an outpatient and community-based structure. The infrastructure outlook, unfortunately, is not part of this, but we do have it separately, where we say, this is the specification, these are the specifications of a treatment center or in a halfway house. So we're proposing how it should look like, and I forgot the name of the built environment where you, it's not specification, I don't know what they call it. Blueprint. Thank you. We do have a blueprint for treatment centers and for halfway houses. Same with other, in the department we did an investigation on our infrastructure. So each and every area has got its own blueprint. Even for secure care, we do have a blueprint for secure care. We do have blueprint for shelters for abused women that we would build from now on, and also for substance abuse, to be specific on this discussion. In each and every treatment program or in halfway house, there's a requirement in terms of the Act and the regulations that we are not going to register your facility if there's no professionals like your social worker, your nurse. Where we are lenient, we're saying psychologists, you can outsource it, but indicate how often because we realize it's a scarce skill. There are no enough psychologists or psychiatrists. So we're saying, have it as an outsourced service. Indicate to us how often are they visiting you in your facility to see your patient. So those are some of the considerations we have in the regulations for you to be registered. Otherwise, we're not going to register you, no compromise, if you don't have professionals that are going to assist you. Learners at the center. I think, Honorable Member, when the presentation was done, it was already passed when you came in, because they indicated what should be done if it's a learner who's accessing treatment in terms of homeworks, in terms of assisting that child doesn't miss exams and tests and everything else that will ensure that they recover. Because if you remove that child, you can remove the child if really the addiction is so severe that he or she cannot concentrate in the mainstream. But if it's an area where you can propose for an outpatient, we recommend outpatient for learners. But if the addiction is severe, well, we commit you for inpatient where you have to stay for a particular period. But then we need to take into consideration your schooling program and make sure that you don't miss just because you went for treatment. We agree outpatient services are not registered. Why? The current legislation we're using, the Prevention and Treatment of Drug Dependency Act, the one number 20 of 1992, it doesn't make provision for the registration of outpatient. That's why you've got a lot of them mushrooming without registration. And unfortunately, Minister and the DG cannot do anything because there's no legislation. Hence, if this legislation comes into effect 1 October, I think that's the area we're going to prioritize. Because now this legislation forces outpatient treatment facilities to register now with the department so that they can be regulated. We do have in the currently the minimum norms and standards for outpatient, where we say even if you are not registered, at least these are the minimum norms and standards which you have to comply with. But as you know, those who are legally knowledgeable, they will say, anyway, these are just norms, they are not enforceable, they are not in the act, so I can somehow, what are you going to do? I cannot even comply if I don't want to. So those are the challenges we have, but we're happy that come on October, if we implement fully, that is the priority area we're going to start with. We do have registered data. We have data in terms of the number of treatment centers that are registered. Unfortunately, we might not have all that are not registered because some of them we don't know. We rely on communities to tell us, to say, it seems like there's a treatment center functioning here. Unfortunately, our people, because of vulnerability and you know, they use even the unregistered because they don't know that this facility is not registered. You find out later when there's a problem now to say, I was accessing treatment in this facility. So maybe what we need to do as a department is to communicate better, inform the public about the list, and maybe publicize a list of registered treatment facilities occasionally so that people can see which ones are credible or which ones they can use. Yes, we can provide that information to the honorable members in terms of steps as required. Honorable Chair had a lot of questions. Media. The issue of media approach, I think we have noted that area to say we usually target the national media and it doesn't really reach the right people. So fortunately, next week we'll be going on air on the 65 community radio stations about the green paper on families. So we'll have to link it with the issues of substance abuse because anyway, families are impacted negatively around the issues of substance abuse. That's where we'll also make sure that this is communicated. Maybe it will reach the required audience. Starving of people, I think it's something to consider because really if you negotiate, sometimes the negotiations don't go well. So maybe we'll consider re-looking at the wedding because it's basically the wedding that is really a concern. Thank you for that. We will look at it. I think our drafter is listening to that to see how best can we put it so that it carries that mandatory instruction. Centers that are already there with less with people with less experience, I think they are covered, because training is going to be across board. So these regulations are regulating private and public. So whether you are running it as a private institution, you are going to be subjected to the provisions of the Act and the regulations. So even the training, provinces are going to be requested to provide training to all programs and facilities in the area of substance abuse. We acknowledge that currently most of the centers are run by recovering addicts with no professionals. That's where we're also going to start to say, we need you to appoint professionals. You cannot run a facility on your own. We're not saying they're not going to contribute as recovering drug addicts, because they can share experiences, but all we're saying, you can't be running a facility on your own. You need professionals who will provide a professional input as you provide. So fortunately, this legislation and the regulations are really advocating for professional input in terms of the services you're providing. In all areas, even under the community base, that's why I said we acknowledge that there's a lack of professionals, but we want to use our retired professionals. They're available to assist and ready to assist. I need some whispers in terms of other questions that I think we've covered. Yeah, I think drug addicts running, I've just answered that one. The determination of policies by management structure, we're not saying their policies must be mirrored to the national ones. Remember, sometimes you come up with a broad policy framework. All you're saying, you say, as a management structure, how is your facility or your program going to be run based on the national framework? Then you come up with procedure manuals, guidelines for that particular service you are running at that center. It's not really about you coming up with new policies. Oh, okay, issues of developmental opportunities. All we're saying is that if you are providing regulation, is around which area of service? Is it prevention or early? Prevention. If you provide a prevention service, remember we are dealing with people who have never either experienced drugs or don't know anything about drugs, or they've got family members that are affected. If we say developmental opportunities, you give information in such a way that it will assist these people to manage their own lives by transmitting or even educating further their own parents, because at a particular given time you won't reach everybody in the family or in the community. So when you say it's a developmental opportunity, it means this person is able to develop and run his or her own life using the information that you have given. For instance, you might even link a person to opportunities of skills, opportunities of training, because you might want to train people to roll out training as community members, as family members. So we believe those are developmental opportunities, because it doesn't end there, that giving information, then you are gone, hit and run. You need to consistently ensure that you invest in the capacity of people so that they can lead their own lives. I don't know if I've explained it properly. My colleagues can add.
Any additional from the department first before I go back to the members?
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I've already greeted the Deputy Minister. I've already met with her. I just want to add on the issue of I'm sorry for that. I'm Mohozi Kalayamudimu. Mohozi Sedib Kalayamudimu is a same name. I'm doing that because people usually call me Kalayamudimu, that is a name, and Mohozi is a same name. On the issue of developmental opportunities, I just want to add on what my colleague has already said here. The Act prescribes that each and every province must establish at least one public treatment center and a halfway house. And then when we indicated what should be in the halfway house, it includes an issue of emphasis on the issue of skills development, whereby workshops needs to be there, more especially for our young people who come to who falls into type of using drugs because they don't have any other skill that they can use in the market place. So we are catering for that, and that is why we are saying this our program should be developmental. And then when coming to the issue of implementation of the acts and regulations in general, like my colleagues have already alluded to the fact that the capacity building or training will commence, and then will each and every person who's rendering, more especially the treatment centers who are rendering treatment services, will be capacitated as if they know nothing about what is happening in treatment centers. And then after all capacity building or training has been conducted, we will follow up with the monitoring and the evaluation of those treatment centers to ensure that they are in line with the prescripts of both the Act and the regulations. Otherwise, some people will get out of the way. For the implementation of this, we have already started with some other things that maybe they haven't been covered in the very same regulation. We have already started with the development of programs or models to facilitate the implementation of both the regulations and the Act. The Act prescribes services such as prevention services, treatment services, early intervention, aftercare services, and community-based services and treatment. We have already developed models in all those areas that I've mentioned, and currently we are only finalizing this one of treatment because most treatment centers, they come up with their they have different treatment programs in place, and then that is where there's a they become so unmanageable to us. So now to ensure uniformity, we have come up with a model, because we cannot prescribe a program for each and every specific person, but the model will guide the development of those programs. We have already started that. We are just awaiting the department to finally approve, but the rest have already been approved and they have already been implemented in some provinces. So, like my colleague has already said, that we have already started with the implementation of the Act and regulations prior to the approval of regulations, because we cannot wait. People want service, so we are already rendering those services ahead of the approval of the regulations. Thank you very much.
Thank you. There's another addition.
Kalaya Modimo is saying on the issue of passing skills to the beneficiaries, I would like to indicate that in the first place, these children don't start by becoming addicted. They start somewhere. They start by becoming not the recipients. In actual fact, they are the people who are being asked to deliver the drugs. Yes, they are used to transport or deliver drugs to the people who are using those drugs. But because they want money, they'll continue doing that. At the end of it all, they'll end up themselves using the drugs. They don't start by using the drugs. Now, we have realized that in order for us to encourage them not to go back to the use of drugs again, we must pass skills to them so that when they come out, look at what the people who are from the correctional services are doing. Some are making beautiful furniture. Some are doing a lot of things. So we are saying, let's do the same thing. While being rehabilitated, they must be given skills so that when they come out of the center, they must not go back to drugs again.
Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, my name is Pierre Vivius. I'm from the Department of Social Development. Just two short comments. I want to link with Connie said about the emerging organizations. Just to add that we really want to get to a situation where we don't want to tolerate any unregistered facilities. Mm-hmm. because we really got a backlog now, and we need to kind of move beyond that point of any of our services. So I think that is one of the things that we really want to strive up with. There was also a question with regard to the implementation and monitoring, to add up what Kala was saying, that and Triyanda mentioned the delegation of powers, and we want to see that we got a mutual responsibility between national and provinces for the implementation and the monitoring of implementation. I think Kala mentioned the monitoring of treatment services, but we as a national department will have the responsibility to ensure that the Act and the regulations will be implemented in the spirit that it was meant to be implemented. So we definitely got a responsibility with the provinces to make sure that it's implemented in a uniform manner, and the way that we intended it to be implemented. Thank you.
Do you have some more questions? I'll give you the last round. Honorable Mube and then Honorable Faber. We will also give the content advisor of the committee chance just to ask questions or to raise her concerns.
Before Honorable Mube, I think it was her question as well, as to whether we'll be able to go fully fledged and implement this in all the regions of the provinces. I think, Honorable Mube, it is a little bit impossible. You never have enough funds to do what you want. If funds were there, we would like to do that. But I think as time goes on, we'll be able to say to the provinces which are the areas that are in need. Because areas are not the same, as you know. But we'll target those areas where there's a need. For instance, when you go to Gauteng, there's a lot of drug and substance abuse in areas in Gauteng. You come here in the Western Cape. Cape Town is worse, and so on and so on. We'll provinces, working with provinces, will assist us to know the exact areas where to start. I just wanted to clear that so that we don't leave that question behind. If you talk about Umsinga, I don't think Umsinga there's a lot of trust in Western Cape.
Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Deputy Minister, I think I was also coming back to that. To say, let me start with the other one. To say I've heard the presenter being, to me, it's a question of the arm's length approach to provinces. We have education, also it's concurrent functions. We have police concurrent. So we have a legislation. We have an act that has been assented in 2008. And now we're dealing with regulations. I think your hand must be more thicker with provinces, not at arm's length. Because if this grant, I'm not sure whether it's a grant, if this money started to be out by 2008 or 2007, it's 2012 now. So either Treasury would be interested to say, I withdraw that money, you don't need it. And you know that you need that money because there is nothing that is happening in provinces. So it needs some detour strategies and enforceable issue. Also, you need a marketing strategy, because others are just littering in their homes, tired of being a slave of the drugs, but because they don't know where to go to. I know there are many centers in Joburg where you go to, but others, they don't know that just next to you, there is this thing. I think also working with health and schools. In schools, with schools or basic education, there are many schools in Gauteng that are closed because the learners have gone to town or whatever it is. So they are closed. And it's a matter of first come, first served. I know I was last year part of the roving on elections. I found one school, I thought it was a primary school. Oh, I saw people sleeping there. But then I was inquiring, what's happening here? No, the church has turned that school to be a hospice, because it was closed. So the utilization the church saw the need of applying to the Department of Public Works. So there are many schools that are underutilized and are closed. You can encourage schools. You can encourage provinces to do that through the memorandum of understanding to say, no, we can use this for whatever it is. And also in terms of the marketing. Last year I got to know, it was during this time, the question of the child, the protection of the children, yeah. The health deputy minister was talking about Gauteng, Northern Cape, Cape Town and whatever. There is already an intervention from a health department. So if you can find out, say, what are these areas, or which are these areas, then you can strengthen that wing in terms of increasing the centers in the provinces. Lastly, I think also because we see with the homes, the vulnerable senior citizen, the child homes, the question of banning, the question of the safety and security of those centers also it needs to be part of the minimum standards. Otherwise people will be there and the roof will be falling to them and all those things. Thank you. I support your endeavor to come up with the regulation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I don't think my question has been answered. I was asking about the child abuse register or the sexual abuse register, and it's very important to me that we get this clear. We cannot have convicted people that's been convicted for any sexual assault or children abuse. Sexual abuse or any kind of child abuse to be involved in these centers, run these centers, or even being appointed at these centers, because we must look at our children, and I think that is, I think we all got common ground on that. So I need to know, are you going to look at these registers, because I know these registers are not up to date, and before appointing people, are you as department going to go and actually intensely look at every person that you appoint in these institutions' background, because that to me is important for us to look at our children. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Father. I also wanted to just check with the department if when you said, ma'am, the Northern Cape, the provincial treasuries can do whatever they think is the priority of when you go to the provinces as this department and check on issues of substance abuse, and you thought as a department a priority of having a structure of this nature in this province, it's a priority. You haven't you talked with the provincial legislature or the people that are involved so that they also support this as your priority, this program as being the priority of the province? Because in Northern Cape, as I know it, there's a lot of substance abuse in the Northern Cape. There are many cases in the Northern Cape. I don't see it really, it doesn't cross my mind that somebody can actually take the money for this program to put it in a program of another nature. It's just a concern on my side. I am also not sure if my last question was answered of the provinces that are without centers. Were they not budgeted for to have these centers, or did they say they will make any other arrangements to identify places? Because I'm worried. Eastern Cape has also an area in the northern areas of Port Elizabeth towards Eastern Utnake and Dispatch, Johnsonville, and the small towns around Eastern Cape. There's a lot of substance abuse in those towns. I remember MEC Majodina one time, she was still an MEC of health then. She had a program in Jamestown, just next to Alwal North. The unfortunate part of her program was on the day of the grants, of old people grants, and everybody, even we knew in our school that on the day of the grants, few kids would be at school. When she had that program, everybody, and the unfortunate part of it, there was a truck, that road, UN6 has a lot of truck falling on that road, on that road. There was a SA Breweries truck that fell the weekend, and then on Tuesday, there was this program, there was also a grant. Everybody was like, you could also feel, when you get into your classroom, the smell in the classroom. It's something that is happening. It's not because of that truck that has fallen, but during the grant day, everybody, the school goes out at 9 or 10, not because the teachers don't want to teach on that day, but the children will jump over the fences and go to town and get drunk, just there to get drunk. I just wanted to know, there's a lot that is happening outside that we see, and this thing of not having these centers, it worries me, because those that are there, they are not regulated, and some of them are not known, maybe, if they are there. Then.
Yeah, it's 1 second. Today there's a debate on child protection at the NCOP. Can you pick up these issues that you want community to... these issues that you're telling us? Some of them, they need that open debate. Just little put that. Okay.
Give over to the debate.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My apologies, Honorable Member. I missed that question of child protection register and sexual offences register. Yes, I think I agree with you. If in our regulation is not explicit, because we believe it's implied, we need to put it as a requirement that you need to be screened or checked if you're not on the child protection and sexual offences register. Because currently for child and youth care centres, we do screen them. But I think in terms of this legislation, we need to make sure that it's there in our regulations as a checkpoint, so that we check. And then I think it's there, maybe it's not clear enough. It's there. Okay. And then the media, we acknowledge, we I think it's an input that we need to take, and they don't need to respond, that we need to market our services better, because maybe people don't know what is available and what is out there. And then we will try to put our hands stronger, Honorable Member, but I think in terms of the Constitution and other procedures, we can go up to a certain level. But we'll also engage our political principals to assist us on how best we can deal with this at the legislature point. What else
in schools that are underutilized?
Yeah, I think what I need to mention is that there are strong coordinating mechanisms. Mm-hmm. Well, there's room for improvement, but currently I may indicate there's Central Drug Authority, there's also Cabinet has appointed an interministerial committee just to look at the issue of substance abuse. And I must indicate substance abuse will include alcohol. So we're prioritizing alcohol because alcohol is like it's normal, it's acceptable. So that's why you'll see that most of engagement is around substance, it's about alcohol, not neglecting the other hard drugs. So our mechanisms are such that we work with various departments, your health, your economic development, your sports and rec, all these other departments that are key. So even basic and higher education are part of the IMC and the technical team and even the Central Drug Authority. Yes, it's an input where we're going to encourage provinces to identify buildings that are not utilized for them to start programs, because that's where we're moving for. Building structures may take time, but using existing facilities may really be quicker and be accessible for service users. What else? Are they said senior citizens? Marketing strategy, I think I have noted it as a comment. It's something, it's an input that we need to work on. I think we're leaking there in terms. So as much as we want to implement this legislation, I'm sure we need to invest our energies on the marketing of the legislation and the services that are existing. What else am I leaving out?
We should say more about the provinces that do not have centers.
Okay. The provinces that do not have centers. Yes, when the allocation was provided, they were supposed to establish. So the same challenge I can mention for Northern Cape, just that Northern Cape were the first, but the others came second, but still they did not establish. But I must say, there's an improvement. All of them, all the four, they've started now the process of, for instance, Limpopo, they've started building, I think next financial year they are center will be operational. So same with other provinces, they are starting to build. As I indicated, building such can take you a year or two. So there are others, they are at different levels. Others, they are at a site level. Others, the building is almost halfway. But I can sit here and assure you for Limpopo, it's almost complete. Then next financial year, they will put resources to make sure that it's implemented. And then I don't know if I left something. I must indicate that the National Department didn't just fold its arm. I think we did approach Treasury, National Treasury also, to indicate this problem of if you bid for funds, they are allocated, and at the provincial level, they can be diverted for another thing. One, we propose that, can it be a conditional grant thing, maybe for a specific legislation? Well, they are re-looking at it. I think DG will bear me up. At the last HSD, where the heads of departments for provinces and the DG are sitting, They are not for conditional grant. They say it's a mammoth task, it's not manageable, but we're saying let's rather deal with the issues of managing it rather than losing the funds to other priorities in the province, because it doesn't serve a purpose. Or even an earmark fund, because we believe if it's an earmark fund, you can't use it for any other thing. So those are the things they're exploring, because now there's also funds allocated for ECB and ECD and victim empowerment already. We are getting information that provinces are diverting it for other things. So that's why Minister said, DG, please arrest this situation before it gets out of hand. So that's why we had a meeting with Treasury. So we believe that maybe they will listen. If they can just consider a conditional grant or earmark, or regard this as earmark funds where no one can touch for a particular period, that would be best. But for us to engage directly with provinces, I think we may step on other people's toes and on our constitutional rights. But I must say we are trying something, because it's also a thorny issue for us. Otherwise, national policies won't be implemented.
Ma'am?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to all the members of this committee. I just would like to... my name is Gigi Gosnell. I work in the Director General's Office of the Department of Social Development, and the reason why I'm also assisting in this question around the dynamics around decisions taken at provincial and national levels, because I sit in this MINMEG and the Forum of Heads of Departments, and these issues are being addressed and discussed. In fact, the Minister and the members of the MINMEG have actually expressed the need to develop a social development council that will strengthen the enforceability of all decisions that are taken at MINMED, because this is the problem that we have. It's not only on issues of substance abuse, it's on issues of ECD, on issues of victim empowerment, and so on. So we are hoping that if we had a legislated social development council, it may force provinces to comply with the national priorities. But Chairperson, I also would like to indicate that it's not really the provincial treasuries that just willy-nilly, you know, reallocate resources from social services to other priorities in provinces, but it's the provincial expos. I worked in the office of the Premier in Mpumalanga, so I saw that some decisions were taken because of some political imperatives. For example, if the health system is collapsing in the province, then EXCO has the political responsibility to ensure that the hospitals, the clinics do not collapse. So therefore, they take certain decisions that may hamper and may even prejudice the other priorities of government, and those are the dynamic tensions that that are prevailing in provinces, and that is why Connie was correct to say our provincial departments may agree with us totally. They support our priorities as national imperatives in terms of social development priorities, but there are certain political decisions that are taken at provincial level that they have to also concur with, because, as you know, our MECs, they report to our premiers. And so, but we do encourage the members of this committee to perhaps have an engagement with our provincial legislatures and even the provincial expos to say, how can we strengthen the social services not to be the first to be sacrificed where there are other pressing government priorities that have to be addressed in provinces. Thank you.
In addition to what UJG is saying, is that yes, we cannot do anything as national in terms of coordination. And that is why we thought it wise to have MINMECs. But also, MINMECs are not enforceable. They can come if they want to come. They can stay if they want to. It's up to the MEC who is there at that time, whether he or she is willing to come to the MINMECs. Sometimes you find only four MECs coming. Sometimes only one MEC coming, sending HODs and so on. It's very dicey. So you need to have a system of allowing them, of enforcing them to come to the MINMECs. Because if they come to MINMECs, then they'll tell us what is happening in the provinces so that we can work together and coordinate our work. So it's very difficult really to, in a situation that sometimes we find ourselves in.
Thank you once more, Chairperson. I just want to respond to the issue related to the utilization of existing buildings. I should think that is a wise suggestion, and I just wanted to maybe inform the Southern. The Northwest province, they did not go the route of building a treatment center, but they are utilizing the ward, and that shows you that they are really committed to this. So I should think maybe other provinces should be encouraged to follow the same suit before they come up with their yes. So that's one point that I wanted to mention. And then the point that the Chairperson also alluded to, and then giving example of what is happening in the Eastern Cape, more especially around the issue of unregistered centers. You know, our approach is that when there's an unregistered treatment center or service, we don't jump into closing them. we help them to put their services together, and then we help them to register the services. We do take some efforts. Okay, yes, in some cases we fail because people, in some cases, they don't want to adhere to our current minimum norms and standards for inpatient and outpatient treatment centers because they are not yet enforceable in terms of the law, and then we cannot compel them to do that. But others, we do manage to register them at the end of the whole process. And then in terms of the new legislation, what the new legislation is prescribing is that from the beginning, once a person conceptualizes, thinks of opening a treatment center, we invite those people to come to us to start building up a concept to say, what do you really want to put on the ground, and then so that the people don't find themselves like in the current situation. A person will go out, buy a big and expensive building, and then hoping that it's going to be registered, and then only to find that it doesn't comply with the, in some cases, with the municipality bylaws. And then it now becomes a challenge. Now we have to now see ourselves having to go to court with that person on several occasions. But the initiative now is that when you think of establishing one, come to us, let's help you go through. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the information. I think we have exhausted the regulations. Let me say up front, we welcome the regulations and we support the regulation. We will always support this department. This is one of the departments that work with us as this select committee. We don't have any problem with this department. Even if we've got clutches there and then, we are people, we don't need to be complacent to everything. So we do work. We work very well with this department. Let me thank the Deputy Minister to availing herself to come to the Select Committee. I know, Deputy Minister and Minister, you are always available to come to us and present any information that you think it is necessary for us as a committee to get. We thank you very much. We thank the department for working with us, because really for things to happen on the ground, we need to work together. We need to come to an understanding of the regulations and policies of any department, so as when the implementation takes on the ground, we are part of the implementation. We know what is happening. Let me take this opportunity and attend the meeting officially. Thank you very much, members. And
I'm going to